Good afternoon, welcome to the Rally of the 99%, organised in conjunction with the Occupy Conference. This rally's been organised by Dawn Punt. Whereabouts is Dawn? So yeah, she's done it pretty much single-handedly, so if people can give her a bit of a clap.
You need to talk right into the mic, nobody can hear you at the moment. You need to be right, you're always touching your lips.
Right, well, this rally's been organised to allow people whose experiences aren't normally heard to tell us a bit about how the cuts and various other things are affecting them. So for that reason, I'm going to shut up now and pass you on to our first speaker, Tom from Occupy Sheffield.
Thanks all for coming. As you may be aware, we're having the National Occupy Conference this weekend. It's the third such conference that's taken place, and it's taking place because there's people all around the country who are interested in making this country work for us, the people, again. Not work for the corporations, big businesses, banks, and the public school boys that seem to think they can run this country. We need to get involved, and we need to make things happen for ourselves and stop expecting others to do it for us. We're engaging together, we're getting together, and we're a group of active people who will make things happen. Just like to ask you all to come down to the Citadel and see the Occupy Conference in person and see what's happening. Get involved in the camp on Church Street if you're available, and generally just get more involved and encourage others to do so. I'm going to pass on to the next speaker now. That's Julian Creasy from the Green Party talking about the Sure Start programme that is in dire trouble.
I'm a Green Party councillor in there. Thanks to Dawn for organising this and asking me to speak. And thanks to Dawn for encouraging me to be a bit more fiery and positive than the last time I spoke. So I've been asked to speak about Sure Start, but I'm going to widen that out. And I'm going to speak on behalf of women. So, I'm against rampant capitalism. Rampant capitalism is tearing apart the fabric of our society and tearing apart people and planet. Dave and Ed, the public school boys, think that capitalism can be tamed. They want responsible capitalism. But I want emasculated capitalism. I looked up emasculated capitalism, or at least I looked up emasculated to find out what it means, and it means castrated, effeminated. And I thought, what a good idea, that's just what I want. So the coalition cuts, and now we know that they're Labour cuts as well, will affect everyone, but they'll affect women in particular. So I want to speak up for women, paid and unpaid workers, mothers and elders. Yes. So, paid workers. Two-thirds of workers in the public sector are women. Many of them earn less than £15,000 a year, and even they will have to pay increased pension contributions. And in the private sector, it's even worse. Three quarters of women in the private sector aren't even in a pension scheme. What about unpaid workers? Well, one in four women in their 50s, people like me, are unpaid carers. They're caring for elderly parents. Having cared for children, they may even still have children living at home, they're now caring for their parents. So, of course, they have to work part-time, they can't progress in their careers, and they're earning less. So they're making a huge sacrifice while they're saving millions of quid for the taxpayers. What's going to happen to those women? Well, one of the things we know is that the support services and the advice services that they rely on are being cut. Advice services are cut, carers' services are cut. But here in Sheffield, and also nationally, the cuts to legal aid are really going to affect the citizens' advice bureaus and other advice services. So we have to fight that. Yeah. thank you. Mothers. Mothers, that's the biggest unpaid job of all. Up till now, mothers have been able to claim income support, but that's changing. If their kids are over 12, they're going to have to claim job seekers allowance. They're going to have to queue up and sign on. And soon that's going down even more if their kids are over 7. So which women are going to be able to find a job with their kids in school from 9 till 3 and only during term time? It's crazy. Support again for mothers. And this is where SureStart comes in. I've been very involved in the campaign to save SureStart. In Sheffield, it suffered 15% cuts last year. Next year, it's likely to be 10%. But in Sharrow SureStart, that has meant that the multilingual outreach workers have had to be cut. And some of the poorest, most vulnerable women who can't speak English are stuck in their homes without any help at all. And finally, elders, older people, older women. Well, women live the longest, as we know, despite all the travails. So they've got most to lose from cuts to adult social care. Sheffield City Council next year is going to cut the budget to adult social care by 15 million. They're looking at cutting 2 care homes. Elderly and disabled people are facing higher charges for the care that they get in their own homes. And then on a national level, we've got the scandal of things like Southern Cross, where fat cats used care homes as a pawn in the money market. Oops, last bit coming up. But what I want to say is that women are fighting back. On the demo on the 30th of November, there were loads and loads of women on strike and on that massive rally in Sheffield complaining about cuts to their pensions and cuts in public service. The Royal College of Nursing and the Royal College of GPs, many of whom are women, the chair of the Royal College of GPs that I'm a member of is a woman, Claire Gerarda, and they've come out clearly against the health and the social care bill and said very, very clearly that that is all about privatising our NHS. So women are fighting back on the NHS. The Justice for All campaign that is fighting cuts in legal aid had a fantastic conference in Sheffield here yesterday. I attended that conference and surprise, surprise, most of the managers in advice centres are women. And they were there making their voice heard to a cabinet office member who was there. And in Sharrow SureStart, women are fighting back, gathering themselves together to fight the cuts and try to fill the gaps. The disability rights movement is growing in strength. Disabled people in Sheffield are challenging the cuts to adult care services. And the unions are petitioning over those care homes that are threatened. So take heart and let's emasculate capitalism. Thank you.
Is there anyone here who knows how this works? Because it stopped.
Next on the list, we had a speaker for Defend Council Housing, but I'm assuming they've not come because no one's come and said anything to me. So our next speaker is Colin Hampton from the Derbyshire Unemployed Workers Centre.
On Tuesday of this week, a welfare rights worker in Reading reported that a woman who he was dealing with came to see him, and her husband had been told that he was no longer entitled to employment and support allowance because he'd failed to turn up for the medical. That man was in a coma. How stupid is that? Last year in Chesterfield, we had a man who was denied benefit because he'd not turned up for his medical. He was dead. Now, when Chris Grayling says that the government is making tough decisions on welfare, maybe it's these sort of things that he's thinking of. The tough decisions of the bully in the playground who picks on disabled people, who picks on the sick. That's what this government is doing. If they really wanted to be tough and make tough decisions, then they would be taking on those interests, those financial interests, the interests of international capitalism. But no, they're picking on the sick and the disabled, and they have the gall to say that they're making tough decisions. But we've got to make it tough for them, because what is happening at the moment is absolutely unbelievable. It's taken 25 years of softening up of public opinion to bring about these attacks on the sick and the disabled. The steady stream of stories about scroungers, about disco dancing, DLA claimants and so on. When we all know that if the amount of fraud that took place in terms of disability benefits, which is so small, if that was transferred to the corridors of power, to Parliament, to industry, then we'd be thankful of the fact that that was only the percentage of fraud that was taking place. The real fraud that's taking place is the robbing of the benefits of people who are entitled to them. I see more people at the Unemployed Workers Centre who say, I'll cope, I'll try and do my best, I don't need these, rather than people who are actually trying to scrounge or get things that they're not entitled to. Sorry. So in Chesterfield at the moment, in North Derbyshire, and I'm sure it's the same in Sheffield, I mean, we have got 1,000 tribunals waiting to be heard of people who are being knocked off benefits. We've seen what's happened with employment and support allowance, and now we're waiting to see what happens with a personal independence payment which replaces DLA. That benefit is going to be pretty much the same basis as employment and support allowance, where people are going to have to get a number of points before they can claim it. We've seen what's happened with ESA. What the government will do is they will blanket refuse to pay people who are disabled, and then see who's big enough and tough enough to appeal the decision. That's how they're going to save millions of pounds. They've already said, when they're bringing in the new benefit, how much money they're going to save, how many people are going to be knocked off the benefit. So you know by the fact that they've said that this has got nothing to do with the benefit to help disabled people. So what are we going to do about it? Well, like I said, we've had 25 years of softening up of public opinion, and there's no point moaning about the fact that all these surveys show that the voters and the public say that they want the government to come down hard on benefit claims. We've got to challenge that, and we've got to do that. We've got to start upping our game. We've got to start taking direct action. In Chesterfield, 10 days ago, we demonstrated outside the cinema in Chesterfield where they showed the film about Thatcher, the Iron Lady. We had the women there from the women against the women's action group from the miners' strike. And we created a huge media for all by the fact that there were people standing up not wanting history rewritten by Hollywood. And we've been on television in Norway, we've been on radio stations all over the world putting our case. We've got to have more examples of where people are not willing to just cower down to this government. We've got to have more direct action. Because none of the mainstream parties are going to do anything for the unemployed, the sick or the disabled. They're too concerned about saying we don't want to be on the wrong side of the welfare debate. By that they mean that they think the public are against the unemployed, against the disabled and against the sick, so they don't want to be seen to be on the side of our people. We've got to change that, and it really is up to us. And events like this weekend, events like this today, have got to start taking place more regularly. But more importantly, we've got to continue to think of the inventive ways that we can get into the media to get to talk to working people in order to change their views, in order to make it so that these attacks cannot take place. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Colin. Now I'm going to bring in Dawn, who's going to speak for people with impairments.
Good afternoon, Conrad and fellow activists. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Right, I'm going to talk today about people with additional needs. And yes, I am going to say people for any label. I'm always going to say that because, after all, we are people first. We are students, we are workers, and we are parents. You know, we are who we are. Historically, everybody knows that historically the discourse of the whole issue of people with additional needs is like the poor cousin when it comes to anybody that's not equal within society, i.e. racism, sexism. People with additional needs come in pretty much last, and it's very much the poor cousin. People are uncomfortable with it, they squirm with it, you know, they really just, you know, they really don't know sometimes, you know, what to say or how to say it or whatever. But the point is, within that, there seemingly is two camps, two schools of thought. There are going to be people that don't like hearing this. There are people that, in my opinion, inverted commas, in my opinion, disable themselves. They need to have a level thrust before them as people. They need to wear it like a t-shirt because, for whatever reason, they feel it's maybe, you know, it provides some kind of comfort bubble, provides them with the security they need, etc., within society. Having said that, there's the other camp of millions of us who do not want to be made to be on benefits. And by the way, people with special needs, having a special need equates to much, much more than being on benefits, all right? People want to contribute. People have dreams, aspirations, skills. But even more so, they're being made to be just put on the scrap heap because we're much, much, much less by and large, to have equal access to employment, to education, and to many of the social things that people take for granted. Now, I'm not going to stand up here and bang on and on about language, but I'm going to talk about, you know, the negative connotations, like I say, that stand behind a label, such as disabled. You know, the people that insist on, you know, putting the label before them as people. People in society that insist on they're disabled, describing people like that instead of us as people, are disabling us. That's the disabling factor. Now, I just want to, for the camp of people that like the label, that need the label, that feel comfortable being subordinate within society, I just want to talk about a couple of people that I've met in the last couple of years that really inspired me. One woman had a severe neurological disorder. She had no use of her hands and feet, her legs and arms. Marissa from Nottingham. She used facilitated communication, which is writing on a special board. Now, she is a young woman. She's completed an English degree. She books, and she does regular lectures regarding facilitated communication and various things. And Another woman I met in Wales, Jenny, again has severe cerebral palsy. Again, she has no use of her arms and legs, and neither of these women have any speech, and they use this facilitated communication. Jenny was somebody I interviewed for my dissertation at university. She has a husband and a child, and she works from home doing accounts for a company. What I'm saying, the message is that we can challenge barriers that are placed in front of us. We can build bridges and fight for what's rightfully ours. Now, I'm not saying for one second, comrades, that, you know, we shouldn't fight for the benefits that we're entitled to. I'm not saying that for a second. We should fight tooth and nail. We should be down there every single day within our capacity, within our levels of ability, you know, fighting against ATOS and what they're doing to people. It's disgusting and it's serious stuff. But what I would like to just remind people is that we are people. We're going to stand shoulder. We should be standing shoulder to shoulder with students, with the workers, with women, with everybody else in society to bring this nasty government down. We can together, we can challenge these barriers and we can build bridges. I'm just going to finish by saying I really resent being constantly colored, inherently vulnerable and weak. I've had setback after setback. Yes, I've had setback after setback. Years and years of like having doors slammed in my face and being told no, 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 you can't, you can't, you can't. Does that make me a victim? Hell no! It doesn't. And as long as people are going to appear to be victims, we will never ever be seen or treated as equals in society. People with additional needs are socially, sexually, economically, and politically marginalized. It's got to stop, all right? It's got to stop, and that's all I've got to say in solidarity. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Dawn. My next speaker is going to be Peter Garnett, who's going to speak to you about DLA. Good afternoon. My name is Peter Garnett. I'm from the Green Party. I'm not going to speak about DLA, but what I want to do is set this rally in a very positive context. The reasons for holding the rally are very negative. They aren't positive at all. We're supposed to be living in a democracy. In a democracy, every voice ought to have an equal opportunity to be heard. In a democracy, we all have a duty to listen, especially our elected representatives. But in our system, our MPs listen to big business, and they ignore the rest of us. This isn't democracy. This isn't listening. This isn't ensuring everyone has an equal voice. Unions are vital. Whilst every employers try to exploit workers, there's a huge need for unions to provide a voice for the workers. But whilst big business and unions compete to dictate policy to government with financial inducements and threats, most of the rest of us have our voices drowned out. The politicians need our votes, but they need money more. Because with money, they can shape the media. They can ensure that far from listening to us, the media demonise us. They demonise the unemployed when there are no jobs. They demonise the young people who don't think it's fair to be in debt for decades just because they want an education. And they demonise people with disabilities who need varying levels of support just to get them to a position of being able to participate in society. But I said I was going to be positive. This rally here today doesn't stand on its own. In November 2010, the students took to the streets. Briefly, it looked like they might start a movement which would reverse the fees legislation. And on March the 26th last year, many of us marched for the alternative. On November the 30th, we went on strike to save our pensions. None of these isolated actions were effective. The media concentrated on the perceived violence. They didn't listen to our messages. But UK Uncut has been a prolonged and innovative campaign that has changed the agenda. And the Occupy movement, under whose aegis this rally is taking place, is moving it further on. The lesson? Well, I'd say it's that these new and eye-catching ways of protesting are really working. And I'd also say that it's dogged determination just to keep going. But the most positive aspect of this new year is the Spartacus Report. In case you don't know it, the Spartacus Report was compiled by a group of people concerned about the vicious cuts to benefits for people with disabilities that were laid out in the Welfare Reform Bill. These are extraordinary people because they themselves have disabilities and they worked through exhaustion and illness to get the report into shape and to raise money for its publication. That's what dogged determination looks like. The innovative bit was doing it via social media, Facebook, Twitter. If you don't know about it, just visit the Facebook page or go to the website. It's very inspirational. But not content with that, having published the report, by the way, it was published on the day that Cameron raised the question about the referendum for Scottish independence, which may not be coincidental. Having found it ignored by the media, they bombarded TV stations to get them to speak about it. And anyone having watched Newsnight this week will have seen Sue Marsh or Tony Gray Thompson presenting with courage and dignity an unanswerable case. And when the effort eventually hospitalised some of those people, Francesca Martinez appeared on This Week on Thursday night to utterly destroy that Tory apologist, Michael Portillo. And it's in this positive context that this rally takes place. The voiceless are finally finding their voice through innovation and determination, with strength and with dignity. And finally, some people are listening. Thank you for listening.
Thanks very much. I'm going to bring in Robert, who wants to say a few words about his experiences now.
Hello, my name's Robert. I'm on sickness benefit and I'm being for a medical. And I'll tell you what that medical is. It's sit down, answer questions and a test. And when I went for that medical, I was worried that I was going to lose my incapacity benefit. And I've heard that I am going to lose it, which is good. Now, I'm sick and tired of Nick Clegg and David Cameron coming up to disabled people and saying we're all scroungers. Yeah. How can we be scroungers if we're on benefits? The real scroungers are in government. Yeah. The real scroungers are across here in them banks. Yeah. The real scroungers are the IMF who want 17 billion quid from us. 17 billion. How much is that going to cost? Europe wants 30 billion off of us. What for propping up the Eurozone? That takes away people's benefits from our country. Takes away people's jobs. I'm sick and tired of David Cameron and Nick Clegg wandering to media saying the disabled people are scroungers. We're not scroungers, we're human beings. And that's one thing which I'm going to tell these people today, whoever's in Sheffield, throughout the world, I'm a human being of benefit through the capitalist system. And I am not going to tolerate any more people being took off of incapacity, just the same money, for a little bit to make wars on other countries. Yeah. We don't want wars on other countries, we want investments in our community. Yeah. We want jobs. We want disabled people to get jobs if they can work. If they can't work, there should be support services there for them. Yes. And those support services are going to go. And they're going to go pretty fast if we don't start fast. And that's all I've got to say. But if David Cameron, Nick Clegg wants to come down here and live on £159 a fortnight, I'd give my £150 for my £159 a fortnight, and I'll live off of this money. Yay! And let's see how much money I can save out of this. And also, on a local issue, I think it's disgusting that the council is proposing to save £2.5 million a fortnight. That's going to cause a lot of problems for disabled people, for starters. We want to keep them weekly so that the disabled people actually get the bins taken out. Because if they overfill the bins, it's going to get heavier and heavier for disabled people to fetch them down. And I think it's an absolute disgrace that the Labour Council in this city should vote for such a thing. And to say that the bins are going to be switched to a fortnight rotation, it's not saving up, but it's going to lose 40 jobs as well. And that's all I've got to say. Thanks for listening.
Thanks very much, Robert. I'm now going to bring in Maxine Bowler from the Sheffield Advocates Alliance to say a few words.
Right, I bring solidarity greetings from the Sheffield Anti-Cuts Alliance. The Sheffield Anti-Cuts Alliance is an organisation that's been set up to actually fight back against the attack on jobs and services and the cuts that this government is trying to run through, which are destroying people's lives across the country. And I'm also the chair of the voluntary sector branch. So, on a day-to-day basis, because I work in the community, I see the impact that it's having on people. The number of people who are now unemployed, young people, who have no hope for the future, I think is an absolute disgrace what they're doing. And that's a consequence of these cuts. And when I have friends who have DLA, who've been called in and have been tested and been told they're fit. One lady in particular I know actually collapsed at the end of it and had a fit, and then they apologised to her. But this is like people living in fear of whether or not they will be able to claim their benefits any longer. And I think these assessments they're doing are completely and utterly humiliating. It's just a ploy, really, about trying to blame and scapegoat the people in society who are the poorest. And I say that the people who should be paying are the rich. The people who've got richer and richer and richer under one government after another. And this, really, what we're seeing is an attempt to scapegoat people. They want us to blame each other. They want to pick on somebody who's even poorer. And I say that we need to start to put the blame where the blame lies. And that's with the rich people, the bankers. Fred the Shred. I say, go to hell, Fred the Shred. You should be paying for the mess that you've created, not ordinary people. And I think that, you know, those people are being allowed to get off the hook, and they're the people who we should be having a go at. And I think it's fantastic that the Occupy movement has arisen. And I'll tell you, we can't rely on politicians to deliver for us at all. What have we got a choice between? Cuts, cuts, or cuts? When Ed Ball and Ed Miliband this week said they agree with cuts, what choice have ordinary people got? I believe there is a choice. We are millions. That we are many and they are few. When we stand together, we can stop them. And that's what some of the protests have shown. And I tell you, we should look to our brothers and sisters in Egypt and the Middle East. They're the people who are fighting back against the most austerity. They're the people who are fighting back against against mass repression. And I tell you, they are fighting and winning. We are the 99%. We are the majority of people. If we stand together, we can stop them.
Thanks very much, Strike. The next speaker is Julia O'Dwyer, who's going to come up and tell us about her son, Richard.
Well, I'll just give you a quick flash, and then I'll have to cover up because it's freezing. So get some video, get it on Twitter.
Thank you very much for inviting me here. Thank you very much for inviting me here. Last week I was described by a nice lady from one of the media companies as being vocal. Well, I am going to continue to be vocal. Would you be vocal if somebody wanted to extradite your son to America?
Yes.
For not having committed a crime in this country? So that's what's happening in my little world, fighting for my son. So if I get a bit blubbery now, you'll just have to excuse me. So how do we come to be in this position? Well, we get in this position because, number one, America wants to exert its jurisdiction seepingly across the world, and they pursue aggressive extradition cases. The second point is that the Blair government, unfortunately, sold us down the river to America as a response to the 9/11 terrorist attacks and signed this extradition act with America that does not offer any protection to UK citizens whilst offering greater protections to US citizens. And since this extradition law came into power in the beginning of 2004, not one terrorist has been extradited to America. But America has been seeking to extradite people from this country who have never set foot in America. You all have heard about Gary McKinnon, a man with Asperger's syndrome. He's charged with hacking into American organisations. And so they've been trying to get him over there for 10 years. And do you know why they want to get him over there? The American ambassador has made statements to David Burrows MP that the reason they are pursuing Gary McKinnon for extradition is because he mocked them. Well, how long has it been a crime to take the bloody Mickey out of somebody? Eh? And then we have Christopher Tapping, a retired businessman, never been to America. They set up an FBI sting operation to trap him and say that he made batteries for the Iraq war. He never made batteries for the Iraq war, and the FBI set up an illegal sting operation to illegally entrap him and then plant an offence on him. And then there's my son, Richard O'Dwyer, a Sheffield Hallam University student, who set up a website as a hobby in his spare time in his university bedroom, well, not his university bedroom, his digs bedroom, which provided links to films and TV shows on the internet. His website held no infringing content at all. It just provided those little blue links that you might get on an email. When you click on it, it takes you to somewhere else on the internet. You don't watch the thing on your email, do you? You go off on the internet and watch it. Well, that's what Richard did, and they want to extradite him for doing that. That alleged offence, by the way, is not an offence in this country under copyright legislation. On top of that, I have a letter from the DPP, Keir Starmer, stating that Richard's case was not and still is not considered to be a serious matter. So I ask the question, why is this government still using extradition to deal with a non-serious matter? Nick Clegg's not here today. What's he doing, actually? I did invite him along and he's not here, is he? And nor Mr. Cameron. I know the government is supposedly reviewing the extradition law, but a recent motion carried in Parliament unanimously was won to ask for urgent reform. And urgent means get your finger out and let's be doing it fast. Because last Friday, two people, Christopher Tappin and my son, were both rubber stamped for extradition to America. And this is totally wrong. There is no protection for British citizens. If Richard O'Dwyer has committed an offence in this country, well, let's have some police round and arrest him and charge him for it. He doesn't need to go to America. We've got a perfectly legitimate justice system in this country. And David Cameron, if you're listening on Twitter later, and Nick Clegg, get a grip, look at the situation and deal with it, because the Home Office is rubber stamping extraditions every day and throwing our citizens to the wolves in America. And so thanks for letting me be vocal again, and I will continue. Thank you very much. Follow me on Twitter, send me up your videos. Let's get this out to Mike Mozart and go wild on Twitter again like we did yesterday. Thank you very much. And by the way, I do support all what you're saying about the cuts as well. Twitter address is at JR O'Dwyer, hashtag Richard O. You'll get there, or hashtag extradition. Thank you very much. John of the Flash.
Thanks very much. Now, I'm told our speaker from Defend Council Housing is here now, so it's Shirley. So I'll hand you over to Shirley now.
Do I have to press anything?
Yeah, you have to press that black button.
I'm not very good at pressing.
Not as close to your mouth as you can.
Right. Hello, I'm Shirley, I'm a council tenant. I'm not a layabout or a scrounger, all right? I'm a decent person. I'm also a member of Defend Council Housing, and we have declared a housing emergency in this country. Why? Because we're in a stupid situation where we've got the lowest building rate since 1923. First time buyers can't get a mortgage because they're too expensive. People are being pushed into the private sector. The rents are going sky high. The landlords are profiteering. And even that's becoming unaffordable for a lot of people. And it's insecure anyway. You've got no security in the private sector. You've got 5 million people on the council waiting list up and down the country. They want a council house. But the point is, there's been no real council house building since the 1970s. And so what have we got now? We've got increasing homelessness. So what's the government strategy? Well, they're throwing money into the private sector, where the problem starts in the first place, and they're going to build unaffordable housing, right, for rent or buy, which we can't afford, right? So at the same time, they're doing everything they can to destroy council housing. They're throwing the book at us, but we are fighting back because we need council housing. Who can build housing not for profit? The council. Whatever you think of the council, that is the situation. And, you know, 5 million people on the waiting list, they're not stupid. They want a council house. They might want to buy a house, but they can't buy a house. So that's why we have council housing, right? So I would say, I mean, at the same time, you've got nearly 1 million empty homes in this country. Why? God knows. But the same, that means that squatting is now a viable option, you know. Like it was in 1945, after the war, like it was in the 1970s. So, you know, the government can solve this problem. They can requisition all the empty houses, and they can invest money in building council housing, and they can put rent controls in the private sector and give people secure tenancies. And, you know, I mean, if squatting is the option, well, that's what we have to do. Now, the situation with the housing emergency campaign is that our strategy is this. We're council tenants, but we want to work together with private tenants, housing association tenants, and people who are unhoused, because we are all under the same attack, not only on the housing situation, but on the benefits situation with the attacks on housing benefit. So we're going to see more homeless, more evictions, more arrears. And, you know, we haven't even got into the worst part of the welfare reform bill yet. So I would say the solution is we have got to be organised. We've all got to get together. And, you know, we've got to say that we've got a right to a home. And we've got a right to rent. Thanks.
Thanks very much. I've now got Alistair's going to speak about alternative ways we could run society, actually, in for the 99% instead of the 1%.
Hiya. The big problem with speaking last is there's hardly anybody left. But anyhow, I'll try and keep this quick, but also rousing. All the other speakers have talked about the cuts, what the coalition government's doing, and what capitalism's doing to ordinary people. This week, David Cameron's been talking about capitalism. He's been saying how he wants a responsible capitalism, how he wants a popular capitalism. Well, I would say that the only people that capitalism's responsible to are the shareholders and the chief executives who got 49% pay rise last year. The only people that capitalism's popular with are the rich, are the 1%. They're over there. Those people, those are the only ones that capitalism's popular with. Ed Miliband's been talking about capitalism. He doesn't like predator capitalism. What he wants is a nice capitalism. But I've got news for Ed Miliband. There's no such thing as nice capitalism. Capitalism is greedy. Capitalism is rapacious. Capitalism is predatory. That is capitalism. There isn't a nice capitalism. One of the last speakers talked about democracy. Well, I would say that we're living under a dictatorship now. A dictatorship of the markets, of the bondholders, the bond vigilantes, the hedge fund managers, the people that squirrel the money around the world, imposing austerity policies and now imposing governments on countries like Italy and Greece to carry out the austerity policies. Somebody said we've got to bring this government down. I agree. We've got to bring all the governments down, but we've got to do more than bring the governments down. We don't just need government change, we need system change. We need to build a movement to get rid of capitalism altogether.
Lost the clap there.
Okay. What do the 99% of people want? Ordinary people are not greedy. Most people just want to see a fairer society. Decent jobs, decent pay, National Health Service, free education, affordable housing, public transport, pensions, and a welfare state. These aren't greedy things for people to want. These are the things that make for a civilised society. But they haven't been given to us by some nice capitalism in a bygone era. They were fought for and won by generations of working class people, of trade unionists and socialists in the past. And now these are the things that the capitalists and the governments want to take off us in order that the rich can defend their system by carrying out attacks on the rest of us. So we must fight all the cuts. But I would say that we need to do more than that. We need to fight for a different type of society. I think we need to fight for a socialist society where the wealth and resources in society are publicly owned and controlled for the benefit of the majority of people, where things are run democratically in order that people, the majority of people get the benefits in society. Then we could have a shorter working week. There could be work for all. You wouldn't have to work until you drop. You could retire at 55 or earlier. We need to fight for these things, which are entirely possible if the wealthy society was shared out amongst everybody. That's the sort of society, that's the alternative we need, a socialist society in this country and around the world. Thank you.
Thanks, Alistair. I'm going to pass you over to our final speaker now.
Sarah.
Okay, thank you, Sheffield. We're thrilled to be here. I'm from a Women of Color network, and we're international in many countries, and our slogan is invest in caring, not killing. And we're demanding the money stolen by the banks, by the governments, the money that's squandered on war, that all that money come back to our communities. First of all, to women and children who are most vulnerable. And we support all the speakers who spoke against the benefit cuts and the attack on disability benefits. They are our right. We're entitled to that money. I'm with the Occupy in London. And we know in London, our camp is right in the center of London. It's built on land that's dripping with the blood of slavery. And not only slavery from Africa, but the ripoff of people in this country who were forced to go down the mines, pregnant women and children, who've had our land stolen. That's English people robbed. All of us have been robbed. And what we're trying to do in Occupy, when we talk about the 99%, we're saying that we refuse to be divided one against the other. We refuse for asylum seekers to be blamed. We refuse for people with disabilities to be blamed. We refuse for our young people who riot to be blamed, because they've helped uncover the suffering and the robbery and the poverty that we're up against. We're refusing to go back to our homes and suffer in silence. We're organizing against the welfare reform bill in London. And almost every day there's a protest or a lobby to stop this horrendous bill going through. And we know that what we suffer in London is even worse outside. In London, a few crumbs fall off the table, and we can get a little jump off the side of the road. But we know that people outside London are struggling even harder. And we need your struggle. We've got to get together. And that way, we can win. Let's stick together. 99% forever.
Thanks very much. Well, that was our final speaker. So I'm in fear of dying of hypothermia here. So I'm just going to wrap it up.